So Paul, thank you for doing this, obviously, helping out with my research. So can you first tell me a little bit about sort of you growing up outside of rugby league? Was it Halifax?
No, I'm Huddersfield born and bred.
Yeah,
Huddersfield born and bred. I was brought up on a farm, which I still live at the same farm now and work at the farm, and I was I've always been in the same area. I've never moved, even when I moved clubs, I never moved houses. I've sort of converted a barn on the farm around the 1990, and before that I lived in a little village next door to the farm.
Yeah.
And never lived more than a mile away from where I was born, and grew up, went to Helm Junior School, which is a local school, and then went to Cone Valley High School, which only played rugby union.
Yeah.
So played rugby union as a junior, and but played rugby league on the Saturday afternoons after the Saturday mornings rugby unions, and on the Sunday mornings, and playing three games a weekend, most weekends.
So if you sort of started rugby union, how did you move over to playing league? Did you have mates that played at all?
My dad played rugby league, my granddad played rugby league. It was sort of a rugby league area.
Yeah.
And I was never going to play union, it was just that that's all there was at school.
Yeah.
So that's how I sort of got into rugby for a start.
Yeah. Did you have any sort of role models growing up watching or playing or whatever? Like any big prop forwards or second rowers or anyone like that?
No, not really. As I got older I did, and I was, when I sort of, not as a real junior, not as a sort of 8 or 9, but the game wasn't played at the young ages like it is now.
Yeah.
You know, you'd sort of got to get to high school before you started playing rugby. There was no rugby at junior schools. It was when you got to high schools, and then I sort of started playing union. But the people I looked up to was people like Neil Fox.
Yeah.
Ian Brooke, David Jeans, who I played alongside with at Underbank.
Yeah.
I played my junior rugby at Underbank and played their first team at sort of 16, 17, 18 year old. And Neil Fox was a player coach, and Ian Brooke and David Jeans played alongside him. And he was playing with like three great international players from that an era before me, and them are the people I looked up to, people I respect. And the further on I went, you look up to people like Malcolm Reilly and Brian Lockwood, who I played under at Huddersfield, and good. But as a real youngster, I wasn't really. There was no rugby, if you know what I mean. It was just.
You sort of played and signed up and
whatever. Yeah.
So what are your experiences then progressing from sort of underbank to into that sort of professional?
Work
up like academies or just straight?
No, I never played academy football. I didn't sign till I was 19. I played probably two or three games with the second team at Halifax under Mick Blacker. And our best mates with Brian, his brother, who played at Hull, and we both signed on the same day at Huddersfield, and we both played at Halifax together and for a few games. But Halifax was in a turmoil at the time, and it was a time when they lost to Kay Woods, the amateur side, and they'd no money.
Yeah.
And we never got the chance to sign. I probably would have signed for Halifax then if they had been,
financially stable.
Well, yeah, if there'd have been the opportunity, and it wasn't money. I'm not a person who really plays for money.
Yeah.
You play to better yourself, to be a better player, and probably later in the interview you'll get the gist of that, about the money side of it. I always played to play a better standard of rugby.
Yeah.
If you're playing in a junior team, you want to play in the opening edge. If you're playing in the opening edge, you want to play in the first team. If you're playing in the first team, you want to play professional, and we was lucky enough to we got picked. Well, we got asked the year before, the year we signed, Huddersfield was playing Cardiff at Ninian Park in Cardiff, and me and Brian got asked if we wanted to travel down with the team and be part of the day squad. Not play, but be part of the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And see how it worked. And so we set off. We agreed to go. The week before, they rang up. They'd had a few injuries, and they wondered if I'd sign a form to play to substitute to be a sub. So I agreed to that. I thought, well, we're going. We might as well play.
Yeah.
And then something happened that the day of the game, and I ended up playing the whole game. And I scored a try.
Yeah.
And we did a really good day out, with Huddersfield. And me and Brian signed a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah. So did that all stem from that game down in Cardiff, the signing?
Yeah, probably. I think we'd have probably signed anyway, but they... I think they wanted to look at our attitude, whether being part of the squad and how we fitted in and things like that. But we was lucky enough to sort of show skills as well by playing, and we both did alright, and we that was sort of when we signed. But I wouldn't sign before that because I got the chance to go to France with Great Britain amateurs.
Yeah.
So it. That was a time scale. I didn't sign any early because I wanted to play for Great Britain amateurs in France, and which I got the chance to go with. So we came back, and then it was just like a process of time of when we actually signed.
Did you support Huddersfield growing up then, being from Huddersfield?
But Huddersfield was a poor side at that time. They were attracting I wouldn't say I really supported anybody.
Yeah.
At that time, we went to the odd Huddersfield game. My granddad was good friends with Billy Thompson, the referee, so we used to go to a few big games when he was refereeing, and went to Leeds and Wigan and all over with Billy. And so we watched a lot of the top games as well as the bottom games. But I would say I've never ever been a fan of anybody.
Yeah, even now.
Even now.
Yeah.
And I think my job here stops you from being a fan.
Yeah, you've got to be a bit neutral.
I've got to be independent, And I play for so many teams, I play for Huddersfield, Halifax, Leeds, Bradford, Sheffield.
Yeah.
So, you're not... I've never been... My heart was at Halifax, really, because, we had a lot of success there at the time. Went to Wembley twice, we won the championship and things like that. So, we had a really good... crack at Halifax, and we enjoyed it.
How did the move eventually come about to go to Halifax?
I did 3 years at Huddersfield playing in the lower, in the first division as it was, the second division as it was then, and I got the chance to go to Oldham on loan for the last five games of the season, and I went on loan, and I thought I did really well, and anyway, things... Frank Myler was a coach, was the Great Britain Tour coach in 84, turned around and said I wasn't big enough.
Right.
So, they didn't sign me, and Halifax came in, offered me the chance to go on loan there, but then Widnes came in, and I said to Halifax, if I'm going on loan, Widnes came in to take me on loan, and I said to Halifax, if I'm going on loan anyway, I'm going to Widnes. I said, because it was a bigger club at that time than Halifax. And so Chris Anderson, he just signed me. He took a punt on me, and I'm going to be very appreciative to him for taking that punt. And he didn't let me down, and I don't think I let him down. We had some good years at Halifax.
Yeah, so you said two back-to-back Wembley appearances. How, obviously it was disappointing, but how different was the experience losing as opposed to winning?
Well, we went into both games massive underdogs.
Yeah.
Massive underdogs against St Helens the year before, massive underdogs against Wigan the following year. And one out of two of them, I suppose if you're looking back, you'd take, at the time... it was awful, but nobody ever remembers the losers. But We worked hard and we played hard at Halifax, and we had a very good 3 years. You know, we won the championship in 85-86, got to Wembley, won it in 86-87, got back to Wembley in 87-88, and then it was like a bubble, and that bubble burst when Chris Anderson left.
Yeah.
And Ross Trudwick came in, and you know, I got the chance to get out probably about 3 or 4 months into that season at Christmas, and you know, I went to Leeds at that time, and that's when probably money came into the situation. Then was, you know, I could have gone to Wigan, and I could have gone to Wigan for a lot more money.
Yeah.
But I said to Maurice Lindsay at the time, who was chasing me, I said, Maurice, I said, if I come to Wigan, I'm coming for the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
he's not Wigan
offering more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, I'm coming for money.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not coming for rugby, I'm coming for money.
Yeah.
I said, and I'm not that person. I said, I'll you know, and so I went to Leeds because I wanted to play for Leeds. Leeds was, you know, I'm a Yorkshireman, I'm a proud Yorkshireman.
Yeah, definitely.
And I wanted to play for the best club in Yorkshire. And, you know, I wasn't interested in playing for the best club in Lancashire. You know, which, in hindsight, was, I never looked back at it being a mistake, but Wigan went to Wembley probably in the next 5 or 6 years after that. So, you know, you look at it like that, but it would have meant more to me if I'd have been part of the team that broke that cycle and at Leeds. It didn't happen, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but, you know, I don't regret what I did.
Yeah.
You know, because if I'd have gone to Wigan, I'd have just gone for money.
At the time when you moved to Leeds, obviously, both Leeds and Wigan, both massive clubs.
Mm.
Did the history of Leeds at all play a part?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, the a lot of things played a part. You know, being Yorkshireman, being, you know, the size of the club, being the city, you know, everything. You know.
It's closer to where you lived as well.
It was closer to where I lived, but, you know, I don't think that was a major issue. Well, you know, travelling, I've never really bothered about travelling. I've gone wherever. You know, I had chances to go to Hull, Hull KR, Cass, Featherstone, Wigan and Leeds at that time. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, I'd made my mind up when Leeds came in that I wanted to go to Leeds. And, you know, nothing changed my mind.
So, moving on to the Lions. So, prior to being selected for the squad, what were your thoughts around playing, like being representing the Lions, being selected? Did you ever look up and watch the Lions?
I'd played in France a couple of times before that. I played in the Chairman's 13. I played a few representative games. And you're always hopeful.
Yeah.
You're always hopeful that you're in with a shout. But, you know, you never know, and I wasn't a certainty, but yeah, I didn't go out as a certainty. I just worked hard, and I think in this game, I think you get out of the game what you put into it.
Yeah, definitely.
And
so did you feel at the time that you thought you'd done enough before you obviously found out that you're going to
I hoped it? I had. I don't know if I thought I had, but I hoped I had. You know, I'd had two or three seasons at Halifax, and probably didn't miss any games in them 2 or 3 seasons.
Scored a few tries as well for front row.
Second row front row, I scored 100-some tries, but you know,
it's quite rare for a forward.
Yeah, but you know, I think you use your own ability, and you got to bring parts of your game into. To make people pick you, and you know, and that's what I did. But you know, you never were certain. You know, when I went on tour, I was certainly not a first choice pick for the test matches. But you get one chance, you know, like everybody played in one pre-match in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
And you know, I took that chance, and then you know, if he'd have named his test side before we went, I wouldn't have been in it. But when he named his test side after we'd played one game, I was in it. You know, and that's because I worked that hard and that dedicated to that. you get a few chances in life and in rugby, and you've got to take them.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
You know, I had that opportunity, I had that chance, and you know, I believe I took it. I certainly don't think I was the best player around at the time, but I was as committed as anybody.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like, I'm not the biggest, I'm not the fastest, I'm not the strongest, but
you give it all.
Yeah, you give everything you've got, and you know, you work hard with what you've got.
Yeah. So, sticking with the Papua New Guinea game, was that your, listen, it was your first time in Papua New Guinea itself?
Yeah.
What did you make of Papua New Guinea and the sort of atmosphere that surrounded the game? So it was a capacity crowd, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, I enjoyed Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
You probably won't get many people who say that they like Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
But Papua New Guinea was good for our tour. Like, you're going into heat, you're playing in situations that you're not used to.
Quite hostile.
But we, I went on the 1990 tour to Papua New Guinea, and just the heat there, the chance to get fit, to build yourself up, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and but the 88 tour was, it's hot, it's hard, it's hostile, but it's what you make of it, and it's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people had very negative thoughts about Papua New Guinea, and you'll probably find that as you're interviewing people.
Yeah.
But you know, to me, it was right, and everything about it was good. They looked after us well. You're like a god.
Yeah.
You know, we, the kids will be playing, every kid you see is playing rugby. Mm. Every field has got a game of rugby going on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You see a game and they're playing rugby with a, like a empty bottle as a ball. They haven't got a ball.
Yeah.
And we give them a ball. They put the ball outside of the field and carried on playing with the bottle.
Yeah.
You know, they probably save that for a special occasion.
Yeah.
And you know, it was good. You know, it did everything. You wouldn't want to go back for a holiday, but you know, for what we did and what we got out of it, it was a beautiful country.
Yeah.
You know, but it's very hostile and very, it's scary. You know, we went out into the bush a bit with, there was a guy where Mikael Fairbanks and I think it was Brian Case met on the plane, and he was working out in the gold mines, and he had a he said, I'll come and get you know, if I get a chance, and he came and he took us up into the mountains a bit,
right.
And it's beautiful, but he had a gun with him. He said he won't go into that country without a gun. And, you know, we never saw anything or saw anybody, but, you know, he wouldn't travel around Papua New Guinea without a gun.
Yeah.
But, you know, we saw bits of it that, you know, other people didn't. Mm-hmm. And, you feel for him a bit because it is very primitive, very, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the markets where they're selling the meat and the food, you know, there's flies on them and,
yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
It's obviously very different to back here.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. But
do you think, obviously, you've got the same with New Zealand, Fiji, Samoa, Papua New Guinea? They've sort of got rich sort of cultural heritage and history, like things with the haka and things like that. Do you think that helps the players and sort of bigs them up for a game?
I'm sure it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, Papua New Guinea are very proud people. You know, and to play for the country is massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, they've. You know, some of them people have, I mean, walk miles to come to training and walk miles to go home, and you know, they've no cars. It's a very poor country, but you know, it means something to them.
Yeah,
and you know, they play rugby because they love playing rugby.
I mean, you've got the same sort of thing in England as people want to. I know some say England, Scotland, Wales, that, but representing sort of the badge and the jersey. Do you think we'd benefit more from having sort of more of an emphasis on heritage in the game, sort of history as such?
I'd like to think people do, but you know, they certainly did when I was playing, and But I don't know. I don't know if they do now as much, but you know, to me they should do. And I think your top players do. I think your people who put the hard work and the effort in do. And there'll be a lot of people who, you know, come in, float in, float out, and they're not interested in the history and the heritage of the game. And, you know, to me, it's a massive part. You know.
Do you think it would benefit us going back to the Lions instead of England, Scotland, Wales?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. No, I think it's the Lions are nothing for me, really. Definitely. I think it should be definitely the Lions is massive for me.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be different because nowadays, because like when we went, we played areas in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't just play club sides, we played
Queensland.
Well, no, yeah, like, yeah, North Queensland, up in Cairns, up in Townsville, and teams in the west, and you know, they brought the players back to the towns where they was, where they came from, if you know what I mean, and you know, they were like area sides representing their area.
Yeah.
But nowadays it's sort of more, you know, they'll play Manly and play, yeah, we did play Manly on a Wednesday night, and but they'll play, you know, Parramatta, they'll play Melbourne or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't see them ever going back to playing, you know, the areas.
Yeah.
But I think Australia are big on that because they play, you know, they've got the, obviously, the state of origin, but they've also got, what do they class it as, country v...
I think it's...
City v country.
Yeah,
which is massive. So all the city players, you know, play for the city, and all the people who come from the country, New South Wales play for the country, and, you know...
It's almost as big a rivalry as the state of origin, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of intensity in there, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the farmer boys who are out of the country, you know, maybe, I don't know.
Is that the one I get one over the city boys?
Yeah. And... you know, it's, I think there's a lot more rivalry, a lot more built-in rivalry in Australia, you know. I was lucky, you know, I don't know, but I was lucky enough to play over there twice.
Yeah, in Canterbury and Gold Coast.
I played at Canterbury in 87 and the Gold Coast in 91. And
do you think that benefited you having played in Australia to then go back with Great Britain?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, back to those who haven't.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I went to Canterbury in 87 and played... I did injure my knee, so I didn't play many games, but you know, I played a few in reserve grade, then I got picked for first grade, but I'd injured my knee, and anyway, I remember I played three, and this is what gets me about people going on about how hard it is and how many games they play. I played a four game in reserve. I hadn't played for 3 weeks. I had a cartilage operation. I hadn't played for 3 weeks. Came back in reserve grade, played 80 minutes in reserve grade, and then you have a 20 minute break, and then there's first grade, and they used to pick the substitutes out of the reserve grade.
Right.
You got to have played half a game in reserve grade to play in first grade. Well, I played a full game in reserve grade, and then we played at Manly, and then 10 minutes into the game, I think it was Paul Langback who got injured, and I was on. So I played another 70 minutes in first grade after 80 minutes in reserve grade in one Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't buy into how fatigued players are and how, you know, I think it's, a lot of it's mental and...
I would say especially if players enjoy playing, they want to play as much as they can.
Yeah, I wanted to play every week and, you know, you've probably got my stats on how many games I played, and I probably played 520, 30 games or something like that. And if I'd have pulled out every time I was injured, I'd have probably played about 300, if you know what I mean.
But,
you just mentally, when you walk over that white line, you're declaring yourself fit.
Yeah.
You know, and you declare yourself fit to play a game. And, yeah, there's no excuse then saying, oh, he came into the game with an injury. You know, you know, mentally, and, you know, I always declare yourself fit and you play and you take the rap with it.
So how did the move come about to go to Australia? Is it something you always wanted to do?
No, the move came to Australia, the first one came through Chris Anderson, who was a Halifax coach, because Halifax, Canterbury was his home club. Well, I'm not his hometown because he was a country boy, but his home club, and his wife was the daughter of Peter Moore, who was a main man at Bullfrog.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've done your homework on Canterbury and know about Peter Moore.
Yeah.
And the Peter Moore was the Bullfrog, who was a main man at Canterbury. And he came over to Halifax a few times and watched us, and, you know, to see his family. And he gave us a game, you know, he gave us a chance to come over, you know. And I went over there, and Canterbury at the time had probably 9 international forwards.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what the hell they signed me for?
Yeah.
But they gave me the opportunity to come and, you know, experience what it was like over there.
Did it take any other English boys over?
Colin Whitfield went at that time.
Right. So did that help having someone else?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, because I think it'd have been lonely in Sydney. Like, I went with my missus, but you know, I think it'd have been lonely just on his own. But you know, the players there was good. You know, there was a lot of good players. A lot of us, you know, players. Terry Lamb, Steve Mortimer, Peter Tunks. Yeah, there was internationals everywhere on the field, and I got the chance to train with them and play with them. You know, and which, you know, it sets your goals higher.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said about playing as high as you can get, doesn't it?
Yeah. And going back to that, I never found it harder playing higher. I always found it faster. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
I think it was as hard playing for Underbank back in the late 70s as it was playing for Great Britain in 1990.
It was just a quicker game.
It was just a quicker game. You'd got less time to think.
Yeah.
It was probably easier.
Yeah.
The better standard you play, I think the easier the game is, mate.
Why?
Because you're playing with better people, better players, and you've got to make the decisions quicker.
Mm.
And you know, if you don't make the decisions quicker, they've scored, or you know, you missed the tackle.
You've always got to be switched on.
Yeah, you've got to be clued up all the time. And,
You
know, I think it was as, you know, easier playing higher standard of rugby.
Right.
And that's probably what determined my retirement in the end, is, you know, I got the chance to, what I call, pinch money for a couple of years afterwards, you know, after I'd finished, or what I classed as finished.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do that. I could have gone to France, and a club in France were offering me good money to go over there, but I'd have been going for the wrong reasons again.
Yeah, certainly.
I'd have gone for money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was always lucky because we got a family farm.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could always fall back onto the farm.
Yeah.
You know, even going back to when I signed for Halifax, 85, you know, basically, 85, 86, 86, 87, but end of 87, Freedom of Contract came out.
Right.
So you signed like a yearly contract. Before that, you signed for life.
Right.
You know, you just signed a contract and you was their property, but then Freedom of Contract came out and they paid you X amount of pounds for a season.
Mm.
And Halifax offered me enough to live off. But, so, you know, I backed myself. I could have still had a full-time job because we only trained at nights and weekends and played.
Yeah.
But I still could have had a full-time job. But with having the farm, I knew I'd always got that to fall back on.
Mm.
And could always, you know, I still did a lot on the farm. I still did a lot of work on the farm, but I wasn't committed to it. I wasn't taking a wage out of it, so I could.
It's something to get away from rugby a bit.
Yeah.
With the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was massive for that, and it still is.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times in the meetings in here, and you know, like last Thursday, we did the championship and the backlog of the championship. And we charged 19 players last Thursday, and we was in that meeting from 7:30 in the morning till about 3:30 in the afternoon. And my head was a shed.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you got tripped off.
And I just said to Dean, I said, it'd be nice to get home to talk to the sheep.
You
know, talk to the sheep and cows. I said, cause, you know, you just, your mind's gone. You know,
definitely.
You know, 6 or 7 hours in one meeting, you know, just watching clips of people doing stupid stuff on a rugby field.
Yeah.
You know, and, but so the farm does keep you sane.
Mm.
It might sound out, but it does.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but there's a book by Geoffrey Morehouse, It's about rugby league. Huh? And it labels you the tough old sheep farmer.
Does it?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that.
So
Geoffrey Moorhouse.
Geoffrey Moorhouse, called At the George.
What's the book called?
At the George. It's called At the George Rugby League Essays, I think. It's something like that. I can't remember the person.
No. No. Yeah.
Going back to the tour. So, like I was saying about the warm-up games, there was the game labelled Black Sunday, which was the first defeat to the Northern Division 36-12. It involved the Marco Reilly 20 minutes scolding after the game when no media were allowed in or anything like that. Had you seen this kind of defeat with the Lions before on tour?
I was thinking before you came, you'll know more about this tour than me because you'll have been doing your homework.
I haven't.
So we lost to where?
Northern Division. It was the first defeat of the tour.
And that'd be up in the Highlands, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think. I can't remember the exact game. Was I playing? You don't know, do you? I can't.
Could move on.
Yeah, I'll move on. But I remember that he,
my next one was going to be the Manly defeat.
Yeah, I didn't play in that.
I
definitely didn't play in that.
I don't think anyone would say they played in that.
No, I didn't play in that. The
what was the mood in camp then around?
It wasn't good. Yeah, it wasn't. It was a bit, and I think the test at that time we probably got 15, 17, 19 players who could compete.
Yeah.
I'm not calling anybody, but when you got back down to the second team, and I could have been in it, you know, quite easily if I hadn't worked hard at the start. I thought we did alright. I thought, you know, we worked hard, we were competitive in most of the game. I built my thumb in the second test on Sam Bacco's head. Swinging. I've got a pin in there. It's still there. A Bennett's fracture where you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've done.
Yeah, you know, your joints like that, and that bone split, and they put a screw through.
Yeah.
And they said he wanted taken out in 6 months, but I've never had it taken out yet, and it didn't bother me. So as long as it doesn't bother me, it's stopping there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did. I think there was a lot of good players on that tour. But there wasn't enough of us. There's only 26 players went.
Yeah, there were a lot of injuries as well.
A lot of injuries, 26 players. You've got 10, or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 having to back up twice a week.
It were a busy schedule as well.
We played a lot of games in a short period of time. We'd a midweek game every week, and we'd there was probably half a dozen players who was playing, and I just think we hadn't enough bodies there for the amount of games we was playing. To back up, and to be fair on the players, it was 30-0.
Yeah, man, the game.
I was there, but I didn't play in it.
How did the, I'm not sure if you read it or not, but the Australian media sort of reflect on Manly beating the Lions? How did they sort of see it? Did they see you coming in? I mean, obviously Australia were a great side, but like as bigger underdogs to the first test.
And we was the underdogs.
Yeah.
We was the underdogs, massive underdogs. And
I mean, no one had beaten Australia for donkeys, especially in their
backyard, don't they? But, I was lucky enough to play. I didn't play in the third test because I'd come home with my injury. But I was lucky enough to beat them when we beat them at Wembley in 1990.
Yeah.
I played in that one, so yeah. You know, I was lucky enough to be in a side that beat them, and you know, really, we should. If video referees had been in play then, we'd have probably won that game, because there was yeah. a, you know, their winning try was not a try. It was, but you know,
yeah. There's a lot of controversy around the first game, the first test of the 88 tour against Australia, the way you got beat 17-6.
Yeah.
It was a sanitary game as well. There was a lot of controversy.
Yeah, but yeah, it was. It was all tough games. Yeah, you know, there was a big side. There was a massive side, and I think I played in the back row for the first game. I think I played in the front row for the second game up at Lang Park. And you know, there was big games, and I don't think the Australians buy into the Test match as much as what the English do at the moment.
Yeah.
They did then. Yeah, you know, they was well supported then.
Yeah.
But recently, I think in you know the Great Britain side have let themselves down so often that you know people won't pay the money to go and watch it. And
yes. It's disappointing. It's Australian walk up.
Yeah, it's disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, we need to do something as a country to get the respect back of the Australians, which is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, going into the first test, was the history of the game, the Lions versus the Australians, such, did you find it important?
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's massive.
I mean, it is, even now you look back and it's historic, looking through the Lions of so and so years.
Yeah, it's like, I forgot who had the quote, you know, it's a matter of life and death, and United is more important than that.
Yeah.
You know, it...
Yeah.
You know, that's a quote that somebody used, it might have been Peter Fox who said it, and, you know, it's a matter of life and death, but no, it's more important than that, and, you know, it is, you know, it means everything to you,
yeah.
You know, you know, it's very hard to take, like nobody had to tell me when I'd had a bad game, or nobody had to explain to me when I'd done something wrong. You've got to be your own worst critic, or you won't get anything out of this game.
Yeah.
You've got to, you know, no point hiding around back of somebody saying, oh, well, he did this wrong, that's why I made that mistake. You know, there's always a reason. You know, it's very easy to blame somebody else.
Mm.
You know, and I've never blamed anybody. You know, I always go home and look at what I've done and what I've contributed and what I could have done.
Yeah.
Differently, more than you know what anybody else letting you down. You know, I was brought up that way, and the only time I knew I'd had a good game is when my dad didn't say anything to me.
Yeah,
you know,
I get the same. Yeah.
You know, if I'd had a decent game, my dad wouldn't say anything. If I'd made a mistake or done something,
you've done this, you did that.
Yeah, you did that. Why did you do this? And, and you've got to be like that. You've got to be self-critical. You've got to, you know. You're only kidding yourself, you know, again. You know, if you're prepared to blame somebody else, you might as well forget it.
Yeah. So, after getting beat by the others in the first test, then obviously the defeat in Manly just before that, did the media give it further backlash, like the Lions or nothing? Because
they've done that before.
Did you expect that?
You expect that. I've been, you know, I'd played there in 87, and, you know, they don't expect anything from you, if you know what I mean. You've got to go over there and prove if you are something, if you know what I mean. And, you know, a few people did, and a few people got invited back, you know, to play. And, you know, I'd never got invited back, you know, to play for Gold Coast if I'd let everybody down in the past, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, you're only playing for your own, you're playing for yourself, right? It's a team game.
I would say, did you feel like you were representing where you were from, the team that you played for when you was in that team, if that makes sense?
No, I think you're representing the team that you're in at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it matters what team you're in or where you come from. If you're part of Sydney Under 8 or Great Britain First Team, you're representing them, and that's your main focus. It doesn't matter where you've been or what you've done or how, what reputation you've got.
Yeah.
You know, you're only there on reputation. You're only there to do a job, and if you don't do that job, you won't be there next time.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to. You know, and this comes back to being, you know, like a fan of any club or anything. You know, I was always 150% committed to the club or the tour or the, where I was at that time.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter that I'd, you know, Huddersfield are playing, Halifax are playing Huddersfield, and I've come from Huddersfield to Halifax. I had no respect for them or no,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When I went to Leeds and Bradford and playing the club that you moved from, you know, you don't feel anything for 8 minutes.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you feel anything in the lead up to it? Like, was it any different? Like, for example, when you moved to Leeds and then played Halifax, was it different to playing Wigan or Saints?
I don't think you can do. I think you've got to be, you know, prepare very similar. Very, yeah. You know, you've got to be very professional in your preparation, and it's another game, isn't it? You know, I know it's the old cliche, it's another game, but yeah. It is. And, you always like to do well. I was more motivated against the coaches that had knocked me back, people like Frank Myler.
By proving them wrong.
Yeah, by proving them wrong.
Yeah.
And proving myself right.
Yeah.
Than I was to a club. Or, you know, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. And that's what I've always, you know, been brought up with. And, you know, Hulk AR, going back to the Huddersfield time, when I went to Halifax, OKR came to watch me, and I forgot who it was, OKR, and they said I wouldn't make it. So, you know, that gives you the kick when you play.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, you need negatives.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a bed of roses out there.
No.
Yeah. You know,
you've got to be real with it.
You need negatives to, you know, to get your positives.
Yeah. So the second test, obviously, where you broke your thumb. I'm not sure if you're aware, you made 38 tackles after breaking your thumb in the first 10 minutes. Mm. Obviously, the team went on to lose. The defeated men have got down that the Lions that hadn't beaten Australia in Australia for 18 years, and Australia maintained a 15-match winning streak.
Yeah.
We were aware of that at the time.
It probably was, but it didn't interest me.
It wasn't like a motivation
to... No, it didn't interest me. You know, you're out there to do a job, and I never went onto a field that I thought you're going to lose.
Mm.
I never went onto a field thinking, you know, oh, we're going to get his ass kicked here. Or I wouldn't have gone on.
Was you aware that if you... Obviously, you wasn't involved in the third test, but you was again in the 90s, that beating Australia would be like a historic sort of win that builds back at them?
No, I don't think it was. I don't think that was in my thought process whatsoever.
It was just focused on the game.
Yeah.
The game.
Yeah. I just, no. You're just playing the team that's in front of you. You know, and it's the same as I say, it's just moving up that speed ladder that, you know, it's a process of getting better into it. You're setting your goals, setting your targets. And I remember when I was at Huddersfield, and what's it called, the old writer from the Daily Mirror, they did a piece on like a first division player every week of who they thought might step up a level.
Yeah.
And they did one on me, and that was I think it was a picture of me with a sheep under each arm. and they sort of asked you your goals, and you know, and my goals was to play play at Wembley, to play for Great Britain, to play at Wembley, play, you know, and I set massive long term goals. And there was a guy at Huddersfield at the time who, like, called Jimmy Johnson, who was, he stuttered to Jimmy, put forward, and he goes, I guess the training at night, he goes, fucking hell, you don't want much, do you? I said, well, if you don't set your long-term goals, there wasn't something I was going to achieve overnight.
No,
that's where you set your short-term goals.
Yeah.
But you know, your long-term goals, you've got to have them. You've got to want to play at the highest level. You've got to want to play at... A lot of people are happy, where they comfortable where they are, and you know, you want to
push further.
You want to push further. You want to be, you want to play the game at the highest level. And you know, yeah, I was lucky. I got the breaks, but I worked hard to get them breaks.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, I want the best player by a long way, but I was very committed to what I was doing.
Mm. So when you came back, so obviously you flew home. After breaking your thumb, what was the response like in England to the test?
I don't know. I think I just got lost out of sort of. There wasn't a lot of media. Wasn't a lot of thing. You know, I can't remember even doing an interview as I came on. Well, I didn't do an interview as I came on. You just went home, got back on farm, and.
Yeah,
you know, I was just sort of lost in the thing of it. You know, disappointed to come home, but you know, it was just one of them things. It happened, and you know, I can't remember anything really different about from going off the plane and going home and turning up for training.
Was it different when they eventually beat them in the third test? Like, was it seen as being a huge occasion in England, well, Great Britain, when they beat the Aussies?
Not as much. The TV coverage wasn't like it is now, and so I don't think it was covered really well at all.
Looking back, you think that could have been better? Or do you think that was just how it was?
Just how it was at that time. Just how it was at that time.
So looking back at the tour. Now you're retired, obviously you went home injured, but is it seen as a highlight of your career?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I was lucky enough to get picked in the 1990 tour, which is, and I think we beat the New Zealand on their own soil in that series. And, we had a good tour there, but I think touring is massive.
Yeah.
It's massive. I remember I didn't get picked initially for the 1990 tour. Mm. It was a late replacement, somebody pulled out. And I remember David Howells ringing me. I was just waiting to go training at Leeds one Tuesday night, I think it was. And the phone went, and they were before mobiles in that.
Yeah.
Paul, it's David Howells, and he said, I've got an invitation for you for the 1992 tour. And I knew Howells there. And he said, what do you think? I said, well, I said, I need a bit of time to think about it. I said, you know, I said, we've got already planned, we've got this, we've got that. And he said, well, how long do you think, how long do you need? I said, I've thought about it. because I didn't need any time. I was just winding him up. As soon as I got the invite, I was going.
So it was something that you just drop everything and go for.
Yes.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Definitely.
Do you think that'd be the same for anyone who's ever represented or would want to represent Great Britain?
No. Because I know people who pulled out of that tour. I'm not naming names because I don't think it's fair, but I know two players who pulled out of the 1992, and I maybe wouldn't have gone if they'd have gone.
Mm-hmm.
But they pulled out and they couldn't be bothered to go.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I've no idea, but I know, to me, it was everything.
Yeah.
To them, it wasn't. And I think that's what makes... I'm not saying a better player, but a more committed player, more committed,
It gets you sort of more up for the games if you know what you're representing.
If you don't want it bad, if you don't want it bad enough, you won't get it.
Yeah, 100%.
And I don't think, there's people out there who don't want it bad enough. And
do you think that's the difference between us and Australia?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a much bigger thing to represent the green and gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's players who sort of take an easy option and not go and not put the work in. They know it's going to be hard. It is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard.
Yeah.
You know, Malcolm really training every minute, you know, every minute of every day. You know, but it's rewarded by what you get out of it. And, you know, I've got massive memories of, you know, both tours, you know, not just on the field,
yeah,
off the field, you know, things that happen, things that, you know, you can't get back, you know, you can't do it unless you're away, you know.
Was it the stuff out of playing that you looked forward to as much as playing?
No, you look forward to playing, but you look forward, you know, you're there for a long time. You're in a good, you know, there's 26 people, 26 players all in a unit, all together, living, you know, you imagine going with, you have 25 mates, and then some of them are your mates in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you're thrown together, but you all become mates.
Yeah.
You know, you all piss in the same pot, as they say. Yeah. You know, you all become mates, and you all, you know, like I'll bump into people now who I haven't seen for 10 years. But you know, you turn back the clock as though you're still best mates.
Yeah.
Because of what you've got out of that tour, what you got out of your playing together, it's a funny game as well, because, you know, so I say there'll be people, you know, every year at the reunions and the Lions and stuff like that you don't see. And then all of a sudden a new one, you know, another one will turn up, and then, you know, what you haven't seen for 20 years.
Do you think the reunions are a good thing, though?
Oh, they're massive.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
To sort of remember, like, the tours and different games and stuff like that.
Definitely. Yeah, they're massive. And, they do a good thing, a good job, you know, like with Billy Kerr's sort of back somewhere, don't they? And organises them, but, they are massive.
Do you always get good turnouts at the reunions, or is there some, like you said, that what wasn't that sort of bothered about representing, not bothered, but you know what I'm getting at? Is it the same sort of group coming every time to the reunion?
Yeah, I think it is, but I mean, I said there's, you know, like another one will come, and then they'll come again, and, you know.
Like people drag people along, stuff like that.
Yeah, like the last one was sat by Paul and Dave Hume, the Witness lads.
Yeah.
And like I room with Dave Hume for 3 weeks on tour, and you know, he's a great kid.
Yeah.
You know, I hated playing against him.
I was about to say, did you know him? Were you mates with him before?
No. You know, no. But, you know, we are, you know, you keep bumping into him at these dinners and that. You have a really good day, and, you know, me and Brian are supposed to be going over to Witness for a night out with him and him and, you know. But, I'm not saying you hate playing against him, but I didn't hate playing, I loved playing against him, because you knew that what you got, you know, that you had it then, they had it you, and you know,
it
was how it was. You know, you didn't hold it against him. No. You know, you were best mates off the field.
Yeah.
You know, I had a massive winning mentality, you know, and like Brian Blackie was my best mate, and people who play amateur games and play, I think they don't understand. I don't know if they understand the mentality you can have of winning a game. My thought was, if I had a choice between, and this is how I explain to people sometimes if I'm out with him, if I had a choice between breaking his leg and winning, and not breaking his leg and losing,
I'd
break his leg every week.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And that is, you know, but if people are playing amateur, don't get that, you know, they don't, you know, I'm not saying you do it, and that's why it's ironic that I'm on this panel now, you know, which is sort of totally against, you know, how I played, and, but I can understand where a lot of people are coming from on, you know, the thought process of what happens and why it happens, but I think the world has changed in general. You know, everybody's responsible now, aren't they? You know, back then,
there's obviously a lot of cameras now as well.
You know, a lot of cameras, there's a lot of, you know, a lot more responsibility, isn't there? And But it's a way of the world, isn't it, everybody? Yeah. Where there's a blame, there's a claim, isn't there? Yeah. Everybody's sort of looking for a cheap way of making money, and if somebody broke your leg on purpose on a rugby field now, you'd get sued, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas back then, you know...
It was something that happened.
It happened.
Yeah. You know? Do you think the introduction of... I'm not sure if you've seen it, by the Ellis Rugby, the introduction of the Lions Heritage range... and a lot of it's focused on the 80s and 90s of the Lions. Do you think that's a good way of sort of preserving the history and representing the heritage of the Lions?
I think anything they do to, you know, to keep it, yeah, to keep it up and keep it going. Yeah, but yeah, you know, the Lions go back, you know, back to the
50s, 40s,
30s, 20s. You know. Yeah.
Do you think it's good for new players to be able to see that, and to see that players 30 years ago are still being sort of showcased and remembered for playing for
players?
Yeah,
the game's changed. You know, the game is changing. You know, it changes every week, doesn't it? And, you know, my thoughts on the game is, and I've said it for ever since I finished playing, is we should, as a country, decide where we want to be and go that direction, whether that be big forwards and going direct, or, you know, we was always known for sort of playing rugby, weren't we, using the ball.
Yeah, throwing it around.
But we always seem to be 2 years behind the Australians.
Yeah.
Because we always seem to be following them.
Yeah.
You know, to me, we should set a standard of how we want to play the game, how we want to manage it, how we want to referee it, and do it our way.
Rather than
following them. Because as long as you're following them, you'll always be behind them.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's very hard to beat the Australians at what the Australians do best.
Yeah, if they're teaching us how to do it...
Yeah, who's going to win?
Yeah, they're gonna be, aren't they? So, you know, we need to set the target of where we want to be, and to me, we want to be playing football, we want to be playing like... I thought Cass last year was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to me, Darryl will go it right. Yeah, they didn't win the big one at the end, but more speckies went to Cass and came away entertained than probably any other club.
Yeah, I mean, even though Leeds won it, the season will be remembered for Cass.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, to me, Cass was brilliant. Mm. And that is how we should be playing the game.
Yeah.
Not, you know, how Leeds or Wigan are, you know, but to me, there's too many prop forwards coaching.
Yeah.
Too many people's had their head in the scrum all their life.
Yeah.
Who are top coaches. You know, and going back a few in, you know, last 10 years, you've had Brian Mack, you've got Lee Radford, you've got Brian Noble, you've got James Lowes, you've got Sean Wayne, you know, probably lots more. But, you know, of people who've spent their life with their head in the scrum.
Yeah. Getting their head passed about.
Yeah, to me. Yeah. You know, you want halfbacks coaching. You want, you know, you want to play some football. You need a forward in there.
Yeah.
You know, like I was director of rugby at Halifax for a few years.
Yeah.
And then, but it's all about having a prop forward as a coach, but you want a halfback as an assistant coach.
Yeah.
So, to be honest, I think Darryl could do with a forward on his coaching team because they're all halfbacks.
Yeah.
I think he, you know, he's got. Who's he got? He's got Ryan Sheridan himself, Tony Smith, and there's one more in there, Danny Orr.
Danny Orr, yeah.
Four halfbacks.
Yeah.
You know, to me, if I was Darryl, I'd have a front row or a back row.
Like a Paul Anderson or someone like
that. Yeah. And that's another one I was coaching at the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was a lot of prop forwards coaching the game.
Mm.
Maybe not as many now, but 5 years ago there was a lot of prop forwards coaching, and you can't go for, you know, you need some vision. Yeah. And I think Devil's brought that vision.
Yeah. Who was it, the same sort of back in the 80s and 90s where you had more forwards coaching than backs?
Don't know really. No, I think
like, is that something that's always been in rugby league?
No, but I think back in our day, I think you got more vision in your halfbacks than what you've got now.
Right.
You know, you got Andy Gregory, Sean Edwards, Paul Arkin, Craig Coleman, who came from Australia, Chris Anderson, Gary Stevens, you know, they got a lot of halfbacks who took a lot of the coaching away from the coach on the field.
Like they sort of organise it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas now everything's stereotyped through the coaches.
Yeah.
Whereas back then a lot of the coaching was, a lot of the free play was done by the halves and who had the right to do what they wanted. But now, I think that's been taken away a little bit.
And,
you know, I'd like to see halfbacks who run a game and nowhere.
Yeah.
You know,
is that sort of what you saw last year with Luke Bale?
Yeah, I think Luke had a bit of a free reign, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the few at the moment is Buffy at Huddersfield, but he's got too much on him, hasn't he? There's no. If Buffy had been in a good, you know, I know he's had his chances in good teams, and he's probably not helped himself.
Yeah.
In a lot of respects, but you know, like Buffy can play. There's no danger about that.
Yeah.
But,
he's always been a threat with his kick and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's always been a dangerous player, and he beat the game fairly well. But it's other things that's Buffy's problem, isn't it?
I'm sure you're aware of panel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's he's been a fool to himself, if you know what I mean. But you know, a lot of people are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what is your current knowledge on the opening of a rugby league museum in 2020?
Not a lot, really.
Not a lot.
No.
What are your opinions on that then?
This would be good.
It's. Rugby League cares are doing it.
Yeah. Well, they'll have all the heritage things from the George Hotel. It used to be in Wakefield, didn't it? What's that big pub called? There was a museum. There was
another one at the George Huddersfield.
Yeah, but before that, there was one at. What was that from? What's the sports centre called? Where the golf course is at Wakefield. The hotels, golf course. What be found for? Is it Rothwell?
Rothwell. Yeah.
What's a pub called?
Not Lofthouse, is it?
No, Rothwell.
Oh, Ulton Hall. There's Ulton Hall.
Yeah, the Ulton Hall golf course. Across from Ulton Hall, there's a hotel there. I think.
Oh, Midland.
It's probably a different name now, but that was a rugby league museum years and years ago.
Right.
Because it had sort of all the tables with pictures of players and.
Yeah.
You know, on the tables and going back to when I was playing. And
do you think that's good for the game to be able to
follow up
that?
Yeah. You know, I think the George Hotel was good, but they're probably not used enough, are they? You know, I don't know if you're going to get people to go to.
Yeah, I mean, it's being situated in Bradford, where the first rugby league game was played, rather than being in Huddersfield, where the birthplace of rugby league.
Yeah.
Is that where you'd put it yourself? Bradford.
I don't know. I don't think it needs to go where he's going to get the most.
Do you think it matters?
No, I think it needs to go where the most folk are going to feed it. You know, I think Leeds could be a good place because you know Leeds does a lot for the heritage of the game. I think Gary Hetherington's good for that.
Do you think more clubs should be following suit?
Definitely. I think Gary does a lot. Off the field, you know, to you know, keep people aware of what's happening or what happened. You know. But no, I didn't know. I know there's a lot of information, a lot of gear kicking about somewhere, pulling somebody's back backyard, garage or somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, which is wasted, really. It needs to come out and be.
Yeah.
You know, there for people to see, and whether that be at a club, you know, whether you know, in a boardroom at a club or at a, you know, in a supporters club or something like that.
Would you like to go and see yourself or something around the teams that you've played in at the museum? Or would you just be interested in seeing what?
Would I like to go? I don't know. I don't look back at myself. That way, you know, like I played at Wembley in 87 and I think I've seen that game once.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Hey, have you got anything knocking about at home?
Games?
like medals, shirts?
I've got my medals and I've got my shirts and yeah. things like that, but I don't. I've got the 88 tour on one wall, and I've got the 1992 on another wall, and I've got a picture of me scoring at Old Trafford on that. And I've got a picture of when I retired, because my last game ever was at Old Trafford, which was a good place to retire. Mm-hmm. So at the end of my career, I finished at Sheffield. I was at Sheffield at, I think it was the second year of Super League. I started the season there, and then I got the chance to go back and to Huddersfield for the end of the season, last 10 games or something. Mm-hmm. So I went back to where I started to finish my career.
Yeah.
And so my last game ever was at Old Trafford in the divisional final where we beat Hull.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was a good place to finish and walk away from the game.
Yeah.
And you know, I got offers after that to go, you know, to your lower clubs and things like that, but as I said, I'd have been pinching money.
Yeah.
Just in.
You weren't interested.
No. You know, my knee were knackered and but you know, I think there's too many people go on too long. I think once you've, and when I went back to Huddersfield, you know, you feel some players out on the same. I'm not saying you're good enough to be up there still, because you're not, because you, but your thought process is still there.
Yeah, your mind's still there.
Your mind's still there. Your mind still wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas you know, your body can't, and it's, that's time to walk away from me.
Yeah.
You know, just put your hand up and walk away. Don't think, oh, somebody's going to offer me 20 grand a season just to
run about for 10 minutes.
Run about for 10 minutes here and there. You know, go get a proper job.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's my thoughts. Anyway, I don't know whether I'm right or not. I've got my own thoughts on.
Do you think that stems from being a farmer?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, I've got my own thoughts on testimonials. I don't agree with testimonials, especially in Super League.
Why is that?
Because I think a lot of players are paying a lot of money to play a game.
Yeah.
And they're taking money off people, the supporters, who are not earning a lot of money.
Yeah. And they're earning more money off that,
top of
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me,
I get that.
You know, it's not right. I have it to a, and I don't support testimonial. I support a lower league testimonial, a lad who's earned bugger all his life.
Yeah, he's been at the same club.
Been at the same club, or, you know. But I won't go to a, you know, I won't pay to go to a big deal with somebody who's earned 100 grand a year for.
Yeah.
Because I just don't agree with it. You know, I was at Earl Crabtree's. Because my mate Brian, he helped him with his testimonial, and was in a pub in Fartown in Huddersfield, which is a Bradford Road, which is a low life place.
Yeah.
And on a race night, to earn, you know, a few hundred quid, and the people there aren't social and aren't dull, and
yeah,
you know, they've no money, and,
yeah,
and they're putting money into Earl's pocket.
Yeah.
To me, that's wrong.
Not right, yeah.
That's wrong.
Yeah, I understand that, definitely.
You know, it's all right taking money off people who've got big money, but not going and,
yeah,
you know, and, but your loyal supporters will want to support it.
Yeah.
You know, they'll want to put some money in, and it's not fair to me. You know, and I probably go back to my era when Sean Edwards had one at Wigan.
Right.
And the only reason Sean Edwards stayed at Wigan for so long is because Wigan paid him more money than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, not because he was loyal to Wigan. If somebody, you know, if rugby union or somebody else had come in, or Australia had come in off
and
offered
him
a fortune, he'd have gone. In my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, Sean was for Sean.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you get a testimonial and you know, there's, to me, they're wrong.
Were testimonials the same back then as they were now?
But testimonials used to be when you're being loyal to a club, because the only way you made money out of rugby back when I first signed, before Freedom of Contract came out, was by moving.
Yeah. Right.
Because then you get a backhand, you get £3,000 or £5,000 or whatever to go somewhere. Then you sign your life away there,
yeah.
If you know what I mean. So, if you, but if you were loyal to that club and so you've just had match payments for 10 years and never had a thing of it, then you deserved a...
Yeah.
And that was the principle of, to me, testimonials.
Yeah.
But then when freedom of contract came out, you know, testimonials, you know, should have gone to me, really. Mm. But, you know, there was some, like, Richard Hawkey had, he had to do last week in Huddersfield. I didn't know about it, but I might have gone to that because he's a lad who's played in lower leagues all his year life and, you know, he's probably in bugger all his career, not kicked him out. And, but, you know, that's going off the subject of what we're talking about.
No, all my questions are done.
Are they?
Yeah. So, I won't keep you any longer.
No, it's fine. I've enjoyed it.
So, I'll turn this off if it's been recorded. An hour and 10.